Hi, my name is Erin Tillman. I'm a dating empowerment coach, speaker, and author known as the Dating Advice Girl. For over 10 years, I've been empowering and coaching singles by helping them improve their social skills, communication skills, and get clear on their dating goals and objectives. Relationships are not one size fits all, but basic consent and respect are important parts of the dating process in order to have an exciting and meaningful connection with others. Listen, learn, and laugh with me on this journey of sex-positive self-discovery. Thanks for listening. Okay, so we're back, and I'm so excited. This next guest, I think we've been in the same or similar spheres for the last few years, right?
For a long time, really. I mean, it's like I'll see you at a party here and there.
Yeah, or, you know,
I see your Instagram feed, this and that.
Right back at you. You know, it's great. So who am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about licensed family and marriage therapist for 16 years, Kate Lurie. She's beautiful for one, but she also
Thank you. Oh, of course, you're welcome. <laughs> But she really is gorgeous.
You'll see a photo in the bio. But she also specializes in the non-monogamy, kink, LGBTQ communities, and sex worker communities, which is amazing because a lot of licensed therapists that I know of, at least, are more, they do seem a little more traditional, a little more buttoned up.
Yeah, it's true.
Right. And I think that can be a little off-putting. I mean, I know that for me and some of my friends, you know, when you think about therapy, you think about things you might want to tell somebody, but you also feel like you don't want to be judged. And I do feel like a lot of therapists, in terms of just how they present, it's like, oh, I can't tell them that because, oh my gosh, they're totally not going to get what's happening in my
life. It's true. And there are great therapists that have kept up with the times and realize that, you know, when in L.A., non-monogamy and kink and all of these things that I specialize in, if you're walking through your grocery store, you are passing by kinky people. You are passing
everywhere.
By non-monogamy. Your gym, you're passing by lifestyle swingers, like all of it and everything in between. And a lot of therapists still don't know that. And they think that if somebody comes in and they're having trouble in their marriage, that it's because they're non-monogamous. And then they'll come to me because they've been traumatized by a therapist who's shamed them for their relationship model or because they're a sex worker or something like that.
Yeah.
When they may be perfectly happy
with
their career choice or their relationship model.
So you're saying that some therapists, not all therapists listening, not all of you.
Right, not all.
But some can see if someone comes in and is talking about being non-monogamous, for example, that they might see that as the problem. Or like try to fix, though, what your problem is that you're non-monogamous, rather than like looking at the relationship.
They'll get stuck on that.
Right.
Some therapists. It's pretty common.
Interesting.
You know, I've literally, like, when I, you know, I have special training in something called EMDR for working with trauma, and, like, when I was still, you know, training in that and everything, and I was looking for a supervisor, and I'd say, I need to find somebody who is open-minded to non-monogamy.
Right.
They would, some therapists would jump in and go, well, you know, you can't help it, Kate, that these people are non-monogamous. And I'm like, wait a minute, I didn't even say that. I'm just looking for someone who's not biased.
Right.
So, yeah, I could give you a million examples, but I've run into a lot of bigotry with therapists.
Wow, that's really, I mean, I'm sure, and even just on a professional level for you, I'm sure that could feel a little isolating sometimes, maybe. I mean, just like, I mean, I'm someone who's trying to, like, build more community around me and what I do as a dating coach, and find people just who are like-minded in terms of, you know, what my focus is. And that can be really tough. So if you're saying that a lot of therapists can't relate or don't think this is a real thing to focus on certain communities, it's like, I feel like that could be kind of lonely in terms of, like, trying to relate to, like, other therapists. Maybe.
Well, I identify as a sex-positive psychotherapist, and so, which is a social justice movement, as you know.
Absolutely.
You know this.
Yes.
So I tend to broaden my scope to making friends with people that are part of the sex-positive movement, and so that broadens my scope to making friends with sex educators and sex therapists and people that are just movers and shakers within the sex-positive movement, and so that gives me a big enough tribe.
That's amazing. Yeah, because, I mean, otherwise, it's like, I'm sure it could get super frustrating to be like, does anyone understand? Like, yes, we understand. And so, we're part of I'd like to think that we're part of a similar tribe or the same tribe in terms of like wanting to do something to help people, you know. Mm-hmm. But also, I mean, at least for me, I try to weave some fun in there too. Which, mm-hmm. I think, because I mean, obviously, like we saw each other at Body Storytelling recently.
Right, which is a great event.
Yes, who I interviewed Naughty. A few episodes ago, episode 180 perhaps, check it out. Dixie De La Tour, who runs Body Storytelling. And so it was really great to see you there. And
yeah, love her. She's amazing.
Yeah, so good. So we talked about what differentiates you from a traditional therapist. So what inspired you to want to cater your practice towards helping, you know, BDSM community, kink lifestyle community, you know, other groups that maybe other traditional therapists don't focus as much on or aren't as welcoming to?
Well, sometimes we drive our destiny, but sometimes the universe pulls us exactly. along, whether we're kicking or screaming. So with that said, so I started being non-monogamous back in 2003. Mm-hmm. Between 2003 and to date, I've been probably every form of non-monogamous you can think of, from, you know, starting out in the lifestyle swing scene, finding out that I was a little bit too much of a kooky artist for that scene, and like and wanted a little bit more depth, and so starting to move into kind of poly or like a hybrid model of non-monogamy for mm-hmm, myself. Mm-hmm. So basically I'm serving the communities that I'm part of,
right?
You know, obviously I'm not a sex worker, but still I have a lot of friends in all of those communities, so I'm absolutely. Serving the people that I'm fond of. Yes. And feel connected to. And this goes back to 2003.
So I mean, would you say that because you've been a therapist for 16 years, so I feel like there's probably a part of the social aspect and then almost seeing a need for people who are helping your friends and people you were socializing with, like, who are the people who help the people I'm around? And is that kind of part of how...
Which goes back to what I said about the universe choosing you. Exactly. So when I got licensed, literally there were some people in the scene calling me up going, Kate, I heard you're licensed. Do you have a private practice yet?
Right.
So literally I had clients before I had a space.
Wow.
And I had to boogie.
Right.
You know,
right,
and, right. and these days I usually have a waiting list because there's such a demand and there's not enough therapists doing what I do.
Yeah. So you mentioned that earlier before we started recording, that you're seeing more and more of a demand. Do you think it's because of younger generational things, or like, I feel like the younger generations, meaning like, post-millennials, Gen Z, whatever the term is of that generation, but they're definitely more open, I feel like, in terms of gender, in terms of sexual orientation, in terms of, I just love this human, this mm-hmm. person, being mm-hmm. pansexual and all these things. So do you think it's attributed to, you know, younger people being more open, or is it not age or generational specific?
Well, I mean, my clients range from like 20 into their 60s.
Yeah.
One thing about all alternative sexual communities is a lot of the people in it know that it's over when you say it's over. So
right.
you've got older people that are just rocking it still with gray hair.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I see a whole age range. Certainly every generation is less rigid. All you have to do is watch Mad Men and see how rigid everything was in the 50s.
Right, right.
And then you watch, you know, people in their 20s where they're fluid in terms of music, in terms of dress,
everything,
sexuality, gender fluidity, and relationship model fluidity.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that too. But also in the entertainment industry, you're seeing a lot, and you're seeing more even on shows like Insecure and She's Gotta Have It.
Yes.
Like different, like different demographics are coming to the scene. Whereas
totally.
At first the research said that people that were in a lot of these communities were white.
White, possibly wealthy, I feel like, or some level of comfort.
Yeah, the whole demographic was usually, like if you're talking about the swing scene,
yes.
it was usually white, Republican, and educated, upper middle class to wealthy. You know, the kink and poly community tends to be Democrat. There is now, the new research is that the swing scene is starting to become more liberal.
Interesting.
And if you watch their posts, they're starting to talk about kink more. Right. Like, they're kind of broadening their horizons a little bit.
When you say their posts, you mean like social media-wise and stuff?
Well, yeah, if you get on, like, a swinger dating site, and you look at what people are interested in, there's more talk about kink, and then the universities that are doing research on the swing scene, the recent research, like 2017, et cetera, are saying that it's starting to skew more, you know, there's more Democrats, et cetera. And I think what's happening, again, with the fluidity, if you look at a website like Field, the app Field, F-E-E-L-D.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
It's set up like Tinder.
Okay.
And so, you know, so it doesn't build community, which in a way is good. Mm-hmm. So everyone's on there. The swingers are on there. The Burning Man people, the kinky people, the poly people, everybody's on there. And so that it facilitates fluidity.
Right. Yeah.
Because you get to know different tribes.
Yeah. Which I think is great too, in a way. I mean, I think that it's interesting because I say that with, because I do actually recommend some very mainstream sites and dating apps, because I feel like, again, like you said, there's just a huge, bigger cross-section of people on it. Mm-hmm. But you just got to know yourself. And because if you're diving in a pool, everybody listening, with a huge mixture of everybody, it's just so important to know what your boundaries are, what you're into and what you're not into, and kind of stand firm in that, because you really are, it's like anyone's coming at you, all kinds of messages are coming at you, and it might not be aligned with where you are, so, but I think that's great, though.
Just to forewarn your listeners, Field is for folks that are, you know, kinky, non-monogamous, in some way, their alternative in their sexual orientation.
Right. No, yeah, it's that's the thing too. There's like so many sites and so many apps, and you know, a lot of when I do coaching, that's a secondary part of what I do, is one-on-one coaching for people, usually people setting up a dating or online dating profile or something, and like half of the battle is just choosing the right app or site, because there's so many sites and apps. Anyway, that's a whole other
conversation. It almost feels like some sites serve men and some sites serve women more.
Yeah.
But that is a whole, you know.
It's true. And then there's a few sites, like some of the mainstream sites are starting to be a little less rigid in terms of gender. So a little more open with trans folks and other like non-binary people and stuff. But a lot of the apps are still so like binary in terms of even gender. And that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff though.
Right. So I was actually, you know, working with a new dating app called #open, and they're really great because you basically could create what category you feel like you fit in and post that and say, here I am, this is what I am. So then it's not like you're having to fit yourself in a certain box in terms of what the app says, but which is great. And I feel like that's the way everything's going, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, by the way, audience knows I tend to be very long winded, so I always have to reel it in because I can talk forever. So what do you feel like, are there any common dating and relationship issues, specifically for dating and relationships with your clients, are there any common things that come up a lot with your clients in regards to, well, just anything? What's the, like, are there any most common things that come up?
Well, my clients are very diverse, and what they come in for is very diverse, so I almost have to kind of pick a few things.
Totally.
Going to pick a few things. There's that category of people, like the couple that, you know, they're really in love, and maybe they've been monogamous, and they value their relationship, and so they understand non-monogamy is hard, and so they just don't want to mess up their relationship, so they come to me to transition from monogamous to something other, in a safe way.
Right.
And so I help them figure out their boundaries that are going to shift over time, their relationship agreements that will also shift over time, and start to get to know. And for a lot of people, the boundaries need to be, they need to come from understanding what other people's pains are.
Yeah.
So if somebody was abandoned by their dad when they were six, they might have more abandonment issues and therefore more jealousy issues than somebody that had a golden childhood.
Totally. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what's interesting about that too? I'm so glad you brought this example up. I feel like in my personal life, but also, let's just say socially and personally, I've been in open relationships, and I feel like the transition from a couple that's monogamous to being non-monogamous is super hard, because I feel like, and this is, I'm not a licensed therapist, but this is coming from what I've observed and been a part of. It seems like there's a certain way that someone's brain is wired within a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like going from that to seeing your partner in a different way in this whole new relationship style.
Right.
It's very hard, and I've seen it go horribly wrong.
Yeah.
I've been peripheral to it being horrible. It's just, it's really, I think people sometimes underestimate the impact it can have to really shift your relationship dramatically in that way.
Depending
on, obviously every relationship and coupling is different in terms of what they're looking for, right? But it's just, it's a big shift, you know?
Yeah, I think one of the mistakes that people make is they think in terms of, do I trust or not trust my partner?
Mm.
They don't realize that there's a million ways to trust somebody. You may trust them to show up to the restaurant on time. You may trust them to show up at the hospital or to love you or to have your back. There's a million ways to trust or not trust someone.
Right.
And you may have a perfect relationship where you trust your partner to be a good dad or mom,
mm-hmm.
etc. That does not mean that you've earned each other's trust within non-monogamy. You may be great partners for 10, 15 years, and then when you start non-monogamy, it is a new journey.
Yeah.
And it is a new way to build trust.
Mm.
And people don't realize that.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. It's like a total new relationship or a different relationship in some ways, right?
You know? Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've seen people do it well. Anyway, again, that could be a whole separate conversation of, actually, that would be a good show. I might ask you back.
Yeah.
Yeah. To talk about, like, I mean, tips for making a non-monogamous relationship work, or like.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, are there anything off the top of your head, are there any things you can think of that could be a good tip for a couple jumping into non-monogamy?
Well, what I would say, regardless of your relationship model, is most people are going into relationships as if they don't even have their driver's license. Like, if I told you, can you get into the car with me?
Right.
I don't have my driver's license,
no,
and I've never driven, and then we're going to get on the 405. Right,
no.
Right. That's how most people are, and so I always tell my clients, right now, the only books that will give you your driver's license are more through a monogamous lens, like a book called Conscious Loving is amazing, and then an older book that's just still wonderful, Getting the Love You Want. Those two, I try and get all my clients to read, and they have a little bit of a Venn diagram overlap. Once you have that, you have your driver's license to go into a relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm writing a book currently.
Yay.
Hopefully it'll be published in 2020,
yeah.
And I'm trying to encompass all that kind of stuff all through a non-monogamous lens.
Right.
So I no longer have to refer my clients to these books that are through a monogamous lens.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, there's books like Opening Up and The Ethical Slut, but a lot of my clients, they come in, all my clients are super bright.
Yeah.
So they've already read those books.
Right.
And they're like, they were great intro books, but we're already past that, and we need something that goes further.
Right.
We need the, you know, 102 book or what have you.
Yeah, yeah,
And these books aren't covering what we need to know.
Yeah.
And so the book I'm writing is that stuff.
Amazing. This is amazing. So keep an eye out for Kate's book. Everybody, that's amazing. Do you have a working title? Can we tell it? Can we not?
I don't want to say yet because it's not in cement.
Don't tell us.
But I'm trying to have it out by the end of 2020.
Excellent. No, this is great. I mean, it can be so nerve. I mean, I wrote my book last year, my consent guidebook, and it was so nerve wracking. Partially because similar idea of there weren't many consent books. And so when you're writing a book to fill a void of something that's not there,
right?
It's just like, oh, the anxiety. Oh my gosh! But it's been deeply fulfilling. And the thing is, I mean, I don't know if this is a tangent too, but I'm gonna reel it in because we gotta wrap it up. But you know, it was hugely fulfilling to just feel like, to put it in perspective and say, well, there's gonna be other consent books when I wrote mine.
Right.
There's gonna be other consent books. They're gonna have a different perspective than mine. Mine is adding to the conversation, and in that way, it took some pressure off, because it wasn't like, you know, people are gonna have feelings either way, all the feelings about whatever we put out there, obviously. But I just, like, I'm happy that I contributed something to the conversation, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all, our job is just to reach our human potential and to serve the whole. And you're, like, serving the whole by putting that book out there.
You too.
And thanks, you know. And it's like, we can help a girlfriend over coffee, but when we put out a book, it can reach all kinds of different people that wouldn't have access to us otherwise.
Absolutely. You know? And because you are a therapist working with clients, I mean, you're seeing people and they're telling you there's a need for, there's a void that you're going to fill with this book. So it's so great. I can't wait.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yay. So, gosh. Okay. Well, I guess tell us, I think we covered almost everything, but not really. Cause you're going to come back and we'll talk more about specifics. Mm-hmm. I really like the idea of doing I think it's digestible when you can give tips to people. So maybe we can circle back at some point in mm-hmm. the future and do top 5 tips or top something tips for non-monogamous couples or something in that realm. Anyway,
sure.
I'm, this is off the top of my head. Bear with me. Okay,
that
here we
go. That sounds
great. So, Kate, where can people find out more about you?
Okay,
website, social media, all the things.
Yeah, my website is katelorree.com. So that's KateLoree.com. Mm-hmm. So that's the main place. But, you know, I'm on Instagram. That's KLoree LMFT. So licensed marriage and family therapist. If you put in my first initial, last name, and LMFT, you'll find me on Instagram. You know, I haven't been tweeting that much lately, so
yeah.
That's probably the place to find me. I'm also on Facebook. If you put in my name, you'll find me.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yay. And just before we start recording, you mentioned that can you just name drop a little bit for yourself, like shout yourself out in terms of where you've been featured or like certain, you said Playboy.
Yeah, I did Playboy Radio.
Yeah.
I have two BuzzFeed videos that, you know, I did a while back.
Yeah.
I've spoken at UCLA. I've spoken at all the major sex toy stores in LA.
Yeah.
And as this book gets closer to being ramping up, I'll be doing all that again. I've been in hibernation lately trying to do
totally.
This book,
totally.
But I'll be out and about soon.
Yay.
Yeah.
Book tour.
Yeah.
Kate, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yay.
And now it's time for the Consent Corner. Tips, advice, and insights from my book, The Consent Guidebook. Chapter 7. Boundaries and positive reinforcement. In this new age of consent, it's important that you have a general idea of what your own boundaries are before entering into consensual interactions and relationships. Your yes, no, maybe list will help you set boundaries with everyone in your life. It will act as a tangible starting point to help you consciously choose positive people, situations, and interactions. By being clear about your boundaries in different situations, it will be much easier to know when one of your boundaries has been crossed. Keep in mind that your boundaries might change, morph, evolve, or progress as you get to know different people and are in different situations. Just always take a moment to check in with yourself so that you know what feels right to you during each encounter and with each individual. Also keep in mind that if you have a specific boundary with a partner, you are always at liberty to adjust that previous boundary based upon anything from a mood shift, level of comfort, a change in your partner's behavior, or just because it's Monday. Whatever. It's your choice to change your boundaries, and because they are your boundaries, you have the power to change them at your discretion. If your boundaries do change, it can be helpful information to let those you are interacting with know that your boundaries have changed so that you are on the same page. This will help lessen confusion and the potential for misunderstandings or negative interactions with others. If you are not okay with a partner's boundaries, they might not be a good choice of partner for you. Find someone whose boundaries and emotional intelligence are more in alignment with yours rather than trying to change, shame, or guilt them into adjusting their comfort level. Conversely, if you feel that someone is not respecting your boundaries or has a different level of emotional intelligence, consider moving on to find someone who fully accepts you and your yes, no, maybes. The Consent Guidebook is available in paperback and ebook on Amazon, Google Books, iBook, and wherever ebooks are sold. For more info, go to theconsentguidebook.com.